All right, we are back. I am back off suspension. You know what? I had a lot of thinking to do, and you know, I'm excited to be back. All right, I'm a gritty player, and I'm officially back on the roster. Of course, Crunch Time Sports, Jeff Ifredi hosting as always, and we got Detroit Football Network's own Justin Rogers, Colton Pouncey from The Athletic, Will Birchfield. I can't confirm nor deny if he is now on suspension. We got a lot of moving parts here at the Lions Collective, but he is. We are swapping out. I saw the comments about my hair versus his hair. So now we're just squaring off, I believe. So last week he had the show. Now it's my turn.
That's right.
People can vote on that. But no Birch, no Birchy today, but he'll be back next week.
I feel like we had to waive somebody to claim you back. So
yeah, it's a tough one.
Will went way too long on Tim Patrick last week. And look, we have to have control. 18 minutes on one receiver who's not even here anymore. No, suspended. Suspended. Straight to jail.
Not the best use of time, but hey, we're here. We got a lot to talk about today, right?
Yeah. You know what? I think my fair comp, Justin laid it out, Ian Kennelly, although he didn't make it back. I would go more Tom Kennedy. I think that's a fair comp for me. I'm back and I'm fired up, man. We got the final roster. This week has been interesting. Obviously, the cuts happened. There's a lot to get to. I know things happened today. The practice squad's filling out. So we'll get to it all. And I do want to start because we kind of missed the beginning of the week when all the stuff started transpiring, especially today. Tim Patrick, which I don't know. I know you guys saw enough of training camp with Tim Patrick. I got to see a little bit. He even said himself he didn't have the best training camp. And then you have Isaac Tesla making plays in training camp in preseason. And then today they trade him away to the Jacksonville Jaguars for a 6th-round pick. They had 6 receivers. Now they're back to 5 receivers. Dominic Lovett makes the cut. But what did you guys make of the Tim Patrick move that happened today? Surprise, not surprise. What do you make of it?
I got to hand it to Colton first because he was on the 5 receiver trend. So all you big men.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That means a lot. You know, I did not think it would get to this 5, but hey, I'll take it regardless. You know, when you wake up and see the news, which I think came out at like, 6:55 or something like that. So thank you to the Lions for that. But when you saw the news this morning, you're kind of like, okay, yeah. There's 2 things that come to mind. One is kind of the training camp that Tim Patrick had. And look, he was honest. Like, he had never really dealt with a training camp that physical, it seemed. He was maybe a tick slower than maybe last year. And it kind of showed at times. Then you see him, you know, working with the second team, see Khalif Raymond getting a lot of opportunities with the first team. I think he had probably passed him on the depth chart, even a guy like Khalif. And then you see, you know, Isaac Tesfaye doing what he's doing and impressing in these preseason games and getting some opportunities. It's not like he was like a constant with the first team. It was really like a handful of plays here and there. But I think he had shown enough behind the scenes that they felt good about the wide receiver room that they had, which is honestly getting pretty crowded when you kind of take a step back from it. And it's like, all right, not only do we have St. Jamo Laporta, but we have Gibbs in the passing game. We have Tesla. We have Khalif. You know, Montgomery can do some stuff out of the backfield. So it's like these are a lot of mouths to feed in one offense. And if you can kill 2 birds with 1 stone, which is, you know, create opportunities for a guy like Isaac Tesla and also give Tim Patrick a chance elsewhere to contribute a little bit more than he would here, I think it's sort of a win-win. Obviously, they weren't going to get like substantial value in return. But to make a move like this, I think it makes sense and kind of where things were trending after Tesla's breakout.
I think it's really fascinating. I mean, there's these guys that just sometimes come in and you don't expect a ton right away. I think we all, obviously the ceiling for Tesla was immense. It's why you move up in the 3rd round, you draft him, even though there's a massive projection there, maybe a little bit of a quote unquote project, and the growth, the development that he showed so quickly, I think caught a lot of us off guard. I have to imagine to some level caught the coaching staff and the front office off guard as well. You know, I think there was with the selection, this plan that it was going to be kind of this 1-year acclimation period. And they were going to lean on Tim Patrick to fill the void that he so perfectly filled last year. And you were okay with that. And then it just, you know, it became really clear really quickly that Tesla was better, getting more acclimated more quickly than anyone anticipated. And the way I put it in a column today is Patrick just looked old, and you hate saying that because God knows I'm much older than him. But there was a day in practice where he got hit by Brian Branch in a non-padded practice and sounded like an old man grumbling about the young kid, you know, going too hard. There were days where it just looked like he was kind of hobbling around. Obviously, the quad injury came up at points. There were, you know, points where he couldn't get separation against cornerbacks like Nick Whiteside, and we're praising Nick Whiteside for this, and rightfully so. He's holding his own against an established veteran, but in reality, it probably spoke more to Tim Patrick. And so I commend Brad Holmes for getting something out of this, right? Yep. Like, you could have let him go. You could have eaten the full $2.5 million cap hit. Instead, you only eat the $1.23 million in signing bonus you paid him. And you get the Jags to take on that salary. It's a veteran minimum salary, but who cares? You got a 6-round pick for basically trading $1 million, $1.5 million. That's, I think most GMs would take that. And so, it's interesting. I think it's probably the comp I would use is, it weirdly enough, it's the other side of the ball, but it's Jack Campbell, Derek Barnes, Jack Campbell's rookie year, right? Like they kind of split those first team reps. And I think that's what you're going to see with Khalif Raymond is kind of a splitting of the first team reps. And by the end of the year, probably more all aboard the Tesla train, but it's going to take a minute for him to kind of get that full array of reps, I think.
Yeah, I want to speak on Khalif because you mentioned it too, Colton. Even the days that I was there and able to watch, he was with the first team, which I think people don't talk about enough. No. Obviously, he's been a player that people – last year he was a little banged up, but people forget how good he is. His first 2 years in Detroit, he had 600, basically 600 yards receiving, and he's been a pretty reliable weapon for them. So I think having Khalif obviously helps. But with Tim Patrick, the fact that you were even able to get capital for him, to me, is impressive. Like last year, he was waived, and he's only gotten older. And you were able to trade him essentially for a 6-round pick, which I think it speaks volumes to what Brad was able to do. So they were able to get younger in the wide receiver room. And when you look at the wide receiver room, and you look at just pure speed, he stands out like a sore thumb. I mean, they have guys that can run, and Tim Patrick's is not really necessarily his game either. So, you know, I can't say I'm not surprised. I was a little surprised, but I think the more that I was able to kind of digest it, it makes a lot of sense, especially with the emergence of Tesla. He can do, I mean, you could plug and play him. I know he's still someone that is going to take a little bit of time, but he is much farther ahead. And we've mentioned this on the show before than any of us anticipated. He can provide everything that Tim Patrick can provide, right? Like the run blocking he has, he's fast, he's big. He can go up and make aggressive catches. He had the catch at Ford Field. I think the worm sealed it. I think the worm at Ford Field, dude, sealed Tim Patrick's fate. That's my theory on this whole thing. So they keep five receivers. I think the big thing that many people were shocked by was, the Tim Patrick thing maybe took some people off guard. But more specifically, the decision to keep Dominic Lovett over Jaxon Meeks, speaking of preseason performances. Jaxon Meeks lit it up in the preseason. He's obviously back on the practice squad, but there's people out there that would say, hey, he showed more than Dominic Lovett, even though that we can agree business is business. The draft pick usually gets, you know, a little bit of the edge, especially I think Dominic provides a little versatility too. He can kick return. He's a great gunner. He can return for you. And he's on the smaller side, which they don't have a lot of small receivers. So I think that benefits him a little bit. But the Jaxon Meeks, I will say that was probably one of the more tougher decisions by Brad, because that's a guy that pretty much did everything he was asked to do, and he unfortunately didn't make the final roster. But what was your guys' kind of surprise level with that as well, with Jaxon Meeks?
Justin, you take it.
I was one of the people that had seven receivers on the roster at the end, and I thought Meeks was the guy. And, you know, we recognize, and I think I pointed out in you know, at least one of our previous conversations, we get a little overinflated on the guys that are right in front of us. And it's really easy to do because they're the guys we're watching the most. And I've learned over my decade plus on this that, you know, that's not really necessarily reality. You know, most of those guys go through waivers, but I saw enough of Meeks in the preseason. I'm like, this guy might get claimed because, you know, there's a little bit of a hunger for receiving talent out there right now. And he's big, he blocks, he does little special teams. Like there's enough there that might intrigue another GM. And once again, I'm proven that we overvalue the guys in front of us. It happens every time, and overvalue them enough that the Lions went down to 50 players, which is sicko behavior. I mean, it's just crazy that we sat here and agonized over these decisions of how to get this thing to 53. And we're fighting through 55 and 54 to get to that. And they're like, nah, we don't want any of these guys. And every single one of them, including Jaxon Meeks, cleared waivers. You know, I do wonder at some level if they were able to pull the Tim Patrick trade off, you know, maybe a couple days before, if they approached the Meek situation a little differently. I don't know. I guess probably not, because they could have added him to the roster today instead of putting him on practice squad. But, you know, Jacksonville probably hung tight, wanted to see what other teams were doing with the waivers and before making a decision to pull the trigger. But, you know, the good news is he is on practice squad. If they need him, he's there to call up when you know, they need to maybe break that emergency glass.
Yeah. I don't know how close the decision was, if it really came down to those two, especially when you're talking about Lovett making a 50-man roster and Meeks not. But when you talk about these two receivers, it was kind of like, it felt like it came down to those two. I don't know if it did, but, you know, when you look at them, they're two completely different players. Meeks is the bigger body receiver, 6'2", a bit slower, ran in the 4.6 40. You know, I think he was more productive in the preseason. I don't think that's like a stretch to say. When you see him out there, he's got the numbers. He's among the league leaders in receptions and yards. And that looks nice on paper. When you kind of dig deeper into his tape, it's like, okay, one of those was a long touch, not a touchdown pass, but a long pass completion in, I think, the second week of the preseason. Another one, he had like garbage time kind of stats on the final drive with Hendon as they're trying to score late in that game. And he's also playing from start to finish, where some of these other guys, like Tassad, is only playing the first half. Like Lovett is, you know, missing some time because of an injury. So like, I think he looked good by default, but I don't know how much that translated to like, hey, this guy, he's got good tape from what we've seen, but is that going to translate to Sundays? And can we use him on a game day? Can he play special teams? All that stuff sort of matters as well. And so look, Meeks was undrafted for a reason. Lovett was drafted for a reason. And it's like, I think they wanted to get younger at that position. That's something they kind of talked about in the offseason. Lovett's sort of the quicker slot guy, can, you know, be a Khalif, maybe replacement down the road. I kind of mentioned that, but, you know, obviously they loved Khalif, as we're seeing in training camp. But yeah, I think it was just came down to a matter of, hey, we like this guy. We took him for a reason. He was kind of slowed a little bit by the injury. We shouldn't hold that against him necessarily. Let's see what he can do. And he, by the way, he can play special teams and contribute for us and not have to be inactive. You know, we'll see if that's the case. But in theory, he can help you out a little bit, even if he's not playing receiver, which I don't know if that was the case for Meeks. So in the end, that's kind of where I'm reading it. But yeah, we have our answer now.
I think it's interesting. You know, Raymond and Patrick are two of the oldest receivers in the league. You know, like we talk about running backs and the wheels falling off, but receivers, it might be even more true. Like I know Jerry Rice played till he was Hendon Hooker's age, but like Raymond's plus 30. And I talk about Patrick looking old. Like Raymond does not look old at all.
No,
like
he doesn't.
He still cooks dudes left and right in one-on-ones. He's like one of the most uncoverable guys in those situations. It doesn't translate quite as well to team stuff, because I think he's usually the third or fourth option by the time Goff looks at him. But, you know, I think Colton is perfectly accurate in saying that when Brad Holmes drafts a guy, there's a vision. And it's pretty rare that Holmes cuts a draft pick, even the day three guys, because this front office, this coaching staff, there's a leash to kind of let that vision play out. And so even though Lovett missed some time, even though he was a little bit more inconsistent, especially in those early games, like they have a vision for him. And, you know, whether he would have got claimed at 185-pound receiver that wins the seventh round or not, doesn't matter. They didn't want to risk that in the way that they felt comfortable risking it with Meeks.
Yeah. What was it that Dan said? Like Brad has a really good feel for, you know, the guys that might get cut or claimed or, you know, end up on another team. So if they kept Lovett, maybe that means, hey, we don't know and we don't want to risk it, as Justin mentioned. So yeah, something to point out.
Yeah, I think the biggest winner in all of this, and we've talked about it a little bit, but just kind of forecasting for the season, Isaac Tesla, I think he, just because of what he provides in an offense with his size and versatility, I think he's the biggest winner in all this, with Tim Patrick departing, obviously. Because for me, my thing with Tim Patrick was, I didn't think he'd be traded or cut or anything like that. But I knew at some point that it would be the Isaac Tesla show. He would take over from Tim Patrick. Now this thing is sped up a little bit. We all agree that Khalif's going to be probably trusted early as that wide receiver three. But this, to me, does kind of open up the door a little bit for a rookie year for Isaac Tesla to be more involved early, even earlier, because I thought he'd be involved pretty early, but this to me opens the door for him to be involved even earlier in this offense because of his consistency in the preseason. Because I know Dan talks about it too. It's like, and I don't know if you asked the question, Justin, but when asking him about how he evaluates basically the players, like when you take into account training camp, when it comes to preseason, like what do you look at when you look at keeping players? And Isaac's checked off every box. He's looked good in training camp. He's looked good in practice. He's looked good in preseason. He's pretty much done everything he's supposed to do. And I think all that combined leads to a player that's probably going to make an impact for you as early as the first couple of weeks, in my opinion, a pretty big impact. So I'm excited for Isaac Tesla in that regard.
Good. Colin.
Yeah. When I look at him, it's funny because when he got drafted, you know, the Lions made a big deal about the height, weight, speed. They're anti-height, weight, speed. You know, they focus on other tangibles that come to mind. And when you look at that pick specifically, it's like that's kind of a height, weight, speed pick on the surface, because this guy did not really produce in college. Part of that's because, you know, Arkansas didn't really know how to use him, it seems like. They didn't know what they had. So he doesn't really have the production, but he's like 6'3", 6'4". He's got the size. He's got the hands. He's got the speed. So that stuff on the surface, it's like, okay, well, this is kind of more of a traits-based pick, and you trade a lot for him. So, like, what's the story behind it? And then you dive more into who Isaac is as a person, what he's all about. You see him at the Senior Bowl, and he's like seeking out safeties to block in the second level. I think that's really what caught their attention. It's like, oh, this guy plays the way that we love our receivers to play. That's why the Lions have so many big runs in second levels, because their receivers are downfield blocking. That's really important to the system. So that checked off the box. They bring him in for a 30 visit, and he wears a Lions jersey with his name on it. And I don't know how many players would do something like that. It's super bold, but it worked for him in a way that really caught Brad's attention. And they thought it was funny. And they're like, all right, let's see what you're all about. They got to know him on that visit. And they're like, oh, this guy grew up on the West Side of State, huge Lions fan, like, you know, had to go the D2 route, was a wing T quarterback in high school, went D2 to learn how to play receiver, goes to the SEC and competes down there. He's physical, catches everything with his hands. He runs fast. He's a physical blocker in space. Like, he checks off everything that they're all about. It's almost like this guy was born to be a Detroit Lion when you kind of take the cover off there. And so initially I was like, maybe that's a 2026 move because he might be a little raw. You know, he's playing mostly in the slot in college. But then they get him out there and you see him in these practices and you're like, he's really not having much trouble with like press man coverage, and he's winning balls downfield and he's jumped 50-50 balls with the size in his hands. And then you see him in these one-on-ones with the starters, and you're like, all right, he just beat DJ Reed. That's a good sign. So it really does feel like he's checked off every box along the way, to a point where I went from 2026 to like he's going to start by week 8 to like now you can call him like wide receiver 3.5. I think that's probably fair with him and Khalif, like somewhere in between, because I think he's still going to play maybe a starter's workload, even if he doesn't necessarily get the start. He's going to play a lot, and the Lions realized this, and they thought he was ready.
Before they traded Patrick, you know, I kind of had settled on Quintez Cephas' rookie production as kind of where I thought Tesla was heading. And, you know, it's probably a little bit more than that, but, you know, he got targeted 35 times as a rookie, caught 20 passes, was pretty productive with it, 350 yards. And I was like, okay, that would be a really solid rookie season. Then you're like, all right, it's probably ticking up. Now you got fans thinking he's going to be the next Puka Nacua, and let's pump the brakes a little bit, because, you know, the end of the day, like the Lions still have so many weapons, right? Like it's still going to be the Amon-Ra St. Brown show with 110 catches. It's still going to be J-Mo that's going to probably top 1,000 again if he stays healthy. Sam Laporta, I think, is going to have a bigger year than last year. Jahmyr Gibbs might be more involved in the pass game, and quite frankly, David Montgomery looked really damn good in the past game, all training camp as well. And so you're talking about still option 4 or option 5 in the offense. And so, you know, I'll throw it out to you guys, but like what if you set an over under right now for yardage for Tesla, where are you landing there?
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah. On the spot. Let's go.
So I think it depends. I'm not going to do that because that's a cop out. I'm going to answer the question. All right. The question is a wide receiver. We'll go 3.5 based on what Colton said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A wide receiver 3.5 or 3.5 we're looking at like 400 or 500 yards for that player usually mm-hmm. in this offense. So I think if I had to give like an over under, I know Ryan just put it 450. If you're giving me that number, I think by the end of the year, I might lean a little bit of the over. I think he might be like closer to that 500 yard mark. In my opinion, I could see that from Isaac Tesla. Cause he's a big playmaker. If he gets the ball, it's going to be like a 20. He's every time he touches it, it's going to be like 20 yards, something like that. So I'll probably go over on that number, closer to 500.
500 feels like a good number. That'd be an awesome rookie year for him in this offense with so many mouths to feed. I think Khalif is going to be involved. Laporta, I agree, Justin. Like, he looks like he's in good shape now. I know he was injured last year to start the year. Didn't really look like himself till the end of the year. J-Mo looks like he's ready to take a leap. So it's like Jared Goff is only going to have so many yards unless he throws for 6,000. I don't know where you're getting all these numbers from.
Why not, Colton?
Why not? Right? Yeah, he can. maybe. I think I'd set the over under at like 350 is what I would. And if you want to take the over, I will not be mad at that. I think he could easily work his way into, you know, exceeding Tim Patrick's numbers, which I think he had around 300 last year. Gibbs had 500 as a running back. So just to put that into context. So that's the other factor here. But I guess it depends on Gibbs because he's been playing more slot too. So you're saying that, but I would set it at 350.
So Patrick had 394. Might make you feel a little bit differently. I would actually go take that further between Patrick and Raymond had just over 600. And I think we know, you know, Goff did not throw as much last season. And so, you know, you look at the schedule, I think they're going to end up having to throw a little bit more. So I think between the 3 and the 4, or the 3.5 and 3.5, you know, probably looking at 700 yards. So I like the 450 that we heard in the comments. I'm going to go a little high, assuming good health. I think 450, and I think there's going to be some pretty spectacular touchdown catches within that mix. Because I think when they get down to the red zone and they get that 5-6 yard line, everybody's kind of pinching on St. Brown. You know, that fade route's going to be there and it's going to be tantalizing.
And he's going to do the worm after. Yeah.
All the worms. Yeah. And you think that's what J-Mo was trying to do last year was the worm, and St. Brown just didn't let him finish?
Yeah, that sounds about right. He wasn't going to do anything else that would get him flagged in 2025, right?
Yeah.
Never.
Yeah. I mean, you know what? Screw it. Jared Goff, 6,000. You know what? Why not? Let's just keep adding. I know we run it. I noticed that's a common thing, too. It's when you bring that up. It's whenever you try to, like, dissect yards, all the fans try to, like, well, obviously.
You add it up.
Yeah, St. Brown's going to get 1,500. It's like, well, J-Mo's got to get 14. You know what I mean? Yeah. And then you get, why can't Sam get 1,000? You know? Yeah. And then you start getting, you're like, wait, I'm at 8,500 passing yards. Like, what happened? You know, what's going on here? Yeah. I would probably agree with that.
I mean, Kyle Allen's going to have at least 1,500, right? It's just the garbage time.
Garbage time, yeah.
Factor in Kyle Allen, a little bit of inflation, you know, so I don't know. You factor in all this stuff, you'll go with 6,000-7,000. But yeah, no, I think 500 for Isaac Tesla is incredible. Third round pick.
No doubt.
Yeah, because I know people threw out the Puka stuff, but Puka was in a different situation too. I mean, the dude got like 150 targets as a rookie. So it's like he's not going to get that type of opportunity, but he'll still have a good year.
Here's what I would say about Puka, though, and not to make the comparison, but I noticed Kevin Clark asked Brad, he was in camp a couple weeks ago, and he asked Brad, like, you know, what's a pick that you really regret not, like, really going after for a player in the draft that you were leading? And he said Puka Nacua. And he said, that guy went to my former organization. I really wish I went to bat harder for that guy, right? And then you see the similarities between their games. And then you ask Brad who his favorite receiver was in this draft class, and he said Isaac Tesla. So not trying to put that out there, but, you know, that's some context for maybe how he feels about this guy and why he maybe, you know, pounded the table this time for a guy like that.
And here's where it gets crazy. Like, Tesla is such a better athlete. Like, it's not even close. Like,
yeah.
Puka's more in the St. Brown camp. Like, just,
yeah,
it takes take advantage of every gift he has to the max. But Tesla's gifts physically are, they're Calvin Johnson-esque, as weird as that sounds. Like, I mean, in terms of just raw athleticism, it's unreal. He's just not as big as Calvin.
Yeah.
No, you're spot. I mean, what did Puka, I think Puka ran like a 4.6 or something like that, didn't he? Like, he ran a...
Oh, I just pulled it up.
4.5.
4.6. Yeah, 4.56, yep.
Yeah, so, yeah, like, in terms of the athlete, you're spot. Yeah, like, Isaac's a more gifted athlete. He's bigger, faster, and the hands are incredible, even for playing in Arkansas, but another rookie, speaking of, to kind of stay on the rookie class, I know the Ahmed Hassanein stuff had people panicking, you know, it's in
panicking.
you pay at first, because people, I think, didn't understand, which is fair, obviously. That's why we have people like you two that can break it down for us, that read it and say, what the hell is going on? Why is Ahmed cut with an injury settlement? And then you really look into it, and then you understand. It's like, okay, well, that makes sense. You know, there's a lot of loopholes in there to why they did it that way. He's expected to be back, of course. He wasn't going to get scooped up by another team or anything like that. But can you guys kind of break that down to me, as if I'm just learning about it, to why maybe Brad went with that route to cut him with the injury settlement to potentially bring him back?
Go ahead, Justin.
Yeah, so when, first of all, the question is, you know, why didn't they use one of the return to IR spots? And, you know, the logical answer is they're still a little gun shy after last year. I know they didn't use all eight last year, but they had so many injuries, maybe thought about using them a few more times. I think they just want to conserve all those. As you said, when you waive somebody with an injury settlement, especially when it's a maybe a little bit more of a longer term thing with the pec, nobody's going to claim that. You know, there's a reason he was a six round pick. He's a developmental talent. Now you're going to, you know, put a developmental talent out there that has 6, 8, 10 weeks, 12 weeks to recover. Like nobody's going to touch that. So there's no concern there. And you probably have that conversation with him. Like, look, we're going to pay you your full salary with this injury settlement for as long as the doctors, your doctors and our doctors agree for you to recover, whether that, let's just say, 8 weeks. You're going to pay him 8 weeks of salary. And then when you're healed, we're going to bring you back. You know, we like you. We want you here. The way injury settlements work, he could technically sign with any other team tomorrow, but he can't sign with the Lions until 3 weeks after the injury settlement expires. So he's going to have to wait a little longer. But if there is this trust and commitment that the two sides have, you wait a little longer and you get it done. The nice thing is they can bring him back on the practice squad. They can use the actual international exemption, so he doesn't even count. He can get an extra spot. With IR, you'd have to activate him to the main roster. You'd have to cut somebody. This allows you to bring him along a little bit slower, and you just ask him to trust the process. And I don't think it's going to be hard with the guy that said he's willing to die for the organization that believes in him. So, art decision to kind of manage the roster, to manage him, and maybe hope to get a little bit more out of him in year two, because probably just because of the injury, he's not going to be a whole lot in year one out of Hasanin.
Yeah, my understanding is like teams just don't really pick up or claim players that were, you know, waived with an injury settlement. Sort of like an unwritten rule is my understanding. It's pretty rare. See it. Like, I think one guy that did it consistently was Bill Belichick, just because he didn't care. He broke every unwritten rule in the book and some rules that were written in the book. But he's at North Carolina now, so he can't be a menace for the rest of the league right now. So maybe they felt more comfortable doing it then. But, yeah, I mean, they kind of knew that he would go unclaimed. And when you have that, it's just about the length of the settlement, getting through that extra three-week period. And it's like, all right, man, we like you. We were so injured last year, we might need all these spots, right? Like, that might be as simple as that. Campbell's talked so much about depth this offseason to a point where I really feel like it's clearly a point of emphasis, but I almost feel like they're scarred in some ways from like what happened last year. And they're like, we're not going to have a repeat of that. We're going to, even though they weren't fully up against the numbers with these IR spots last year, it felt like that. And it felt like they had to maybe, you know, be cognizant of that as the year went on. And so to me, it just, on the outside looking in, it felt like they were like, hey, we can't afford to use these right now on a guy that we didn't even know was going to play this year. You know, Dan said it himself, like, can't say with certainty he's going to play in 2025. So if that's the case, and you don't want to use one of these spots on a guy that like might not contribute much anyway, then that's when you have this sort of handshake agreement, like, hey, we're going to bring you back. You're not going to get claimed. When this settlement period ends, we're going to scoop you right back up. We'll keep you around. We'll keep developing you. You know, we love you as a player. We love what you're all about. You fit us. You're a culture guy, like all that stuff. And, you know, he said the same thing. So to me, on the surface, it looks a little weird. But when you kind of dig into it a little bit more, I think it makes some sense. And I understand why they went this route.
Yeah, is that also, I don't think it's obviously not the same situation, but the Dan Skipper situation, it seemed like I saw a report, and take report lightly, but Twitter report. That there was maybe a potential like MRI with Dan Skipper or something like that. Cause that one, I think he's one of those guys, people just assume he's like a book to the roster guy. You know, he's a glue guy. They love Dan Skipper. and then he was cut, and then I think he's back on the practice squad. Is there any theory behind that? Maybe that they'd rather put him on a practice squad, and then they kept Jamarco Jones, the other tackle. Maybe he just outplayed him. I don't know if there's more insight you guys have than that than I do.
Well, I don't think there's anything to the MRI, because if you're injured, you got to have an injury settlement. You can't just cut an injured guy because something weird popped up in MRI. So that sounds like
okay, so Twitter report wrong.
Classic Twitter BS. Yeah. Okay. Twitter's one step above Facebook and two steps above Instagram. Like, just be careful of your social media reports for sure. Look, it's very simple. The theory is Jamarco Jones was better in the Detroit Lions' eyes. And I think it started out with Skipper in the lead. He won that job last year. He won it fairly handily. But by the end of camp, you know, looking back and maybe, you know, having some hindsight, Jamarco Jones took over the left tackle spot and Skipper was moved to the right tackle spot. And then the very last practice or two, there was some reps where Jamarco was kind of subbing in for the first team. And I, you know, you wonder, maybe does Taylor Decker have some cramps or something, but Campbell had sent something before that practice about wanting to sprinkle guys in the first team and take a look at them. And so, you know, it's just something I others probably glossed over, but, you know, Jamarco kind of passed him there at the end. And I think it's a setup just like last year. You know, Manu's probably not ready. And I think if they went into a game and there was an injury situation and needed one more guy, Skipper's probably going to get the bump off the practice squad and be that extra emergency option. But, you know, this was just a case of a guy getting passed by another guy.
Yeah, Justin, I think what you're referencing is the final training camp practice, that joint practice against the Texans, where, like, yeah,
I thought it was, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah, so we saw Jamarco kind of getting some reps in for Taylor, and we're like, oh, that's a little interesting. But he did, you know, preface, this is what we're going to see today, so kind of flew under the radar a little bit, but I think that's right. And, like, what I'll say is, when I was doing roster projections, especially, like, midway through camp, I would say, there's a period where I was putting five tackles on the roster, obviously the two starters, Manu, but I was putting Skipper and Jamarco both in until I could make a decision, because what I was seeing was Skip didn't have the best training camp, if we're being honest. And yeah, now that Jamarco was, like, miles better, but it felt like he was maybe holding his own against, like, you know, some of the Lions starting defensive ends, obviously, in practice. I think Skip held up pretty good in the preseason games, but in practice it was kind of a little bit lopsided sometimes. I think going back to last year when Skip had to fill in for Taylor Decker, it got a little rough when you watched him out there. And it's kind of like he was holding on for dear life a little bit. So if they think that Jamarco is more game ready if in the event of an injury to Sewell or Decker, I understand why they went this route. And they could have easily kept Skip. And they would have if they thought he was a better player at this point. But Jamarco got that spot and Skip's back on the practice squad. So I think those actions kind of tell you where they're leaning with it and why it played out this way.
Yeah, I mean, even on the other side, the defensive line, like, to kind of go back to, we were talking about Ahmed, and obviously his injury stinks, but they also cut a lot of other defensive linemen. One of those, a guy who had a pretty good preseason, Nate Lynn, who I think people were a little surprised by. But, you know, you look at some other players, they ended up bringing back to the practice squad. They brought back Isaac Ukwu, Keith Cooper Jr., obviously another player that was a UDFA that showed some flashes in training camp as well. Currently just pure edges. They have defensive linemen that can kind of play. I mean, they have obviously Derek Barnes who plays Sam. They might have him blitz as well, but they just pure edges. They have Aiden, they have Davenport, and they have AQM right now. And then they have some other guys that maybe can play on the edge. Like Josh will be back. I guess he could see him a little bit on the edge, but what do you guys make of just that defensive line room? Don't worry, we'll get to Za'Darius Smith. All right. I already see the comments asking about Za'Darius Smith. There's roster spot open. Everyone's asking. But what would you make any surprise cuts on that defensive line that you maybe are a little surprised by? They only got really three pure edges right now, or not at all?
Hit it, Colton.
Yeah, I just didn't expect to see three. I think that's the number that stands out to everyone when the roster drops. And you're honestly, like, the roster comes out later. I think the first thing the Lions do is they put out all the waived guys and released guys, and you can kind of do the math in your head a little bit. And you're looking at names, and you're like, wait a minute. Does that mean they only kept three edges? Is that right? Is that number right? And yeah, that's kind of where they went for this. I was a little bit surprised that Nate Lynn didn't get a spot. I thought he would. Maybe a guy like Keith Cooper, if you want to call him an edge, maybe that's a bit of a surprise, but they also added Chris Smith, a guy that's been in the system for a couple of years at DT. So that's probably the trade-off there. But yeah, I was a little bit surprised. I thought they'd go with maybe four, with the fourth being Nate, but clearly they thought they could upgrade, put in a couple claims for some defensive linemen, which we can hit on in a second. But yeah, initially you're a bit surprised at how thin it is, but you know, hey, they're going to bring in some guys. No team can go into an NFL season with three edge rushers. That's going to change quickly. Whether that's the Darius or someone else, we don't quite know yet at this point in time. But my initial reaction was, hold tight, help is on the way.
I thought, we talked about it with Meeks earlier, I thought Nate Lynn maybe earned it just based on, you know, what the other guys did in that competition. And when they waive him, of course, your first thought goes to Za'Darius Smith. But how dare we disrespect Tyrus Wheat, who I don't know anything about. I don't. Like, you know, these waiver claims come in, and I have a good grasp of starting level talent in the NFL. I don't know the depth of 32 teams, and I don't want to pretend like I do. So I'm cramming, you know, as the signing is happening, watching, you know, some clips of his tape through the NFL pro system. And, you know, you could see a little bit of what the Lions would like about him. You know, he's a bigger end. He's powerful. He plays with really, really active hands, similar to some guy named Za'Darius Smith. You know, he sheds blocks really well. He sees it. He seems to play the run pretty well. And he had, I think, 9 quarterback pressures in limited work last year, around 100 snaps. Played in the preseason, had 70 pass rush snaps, had 7 quarterback pressures, 8 quarterback pressures in the preseason. And so there's a little bit of juice there. And I look at Nate Lynn, and I said this to a few different people, like, yeah, he had a really good preseason. Who did he face as an offensive tackle in practice, in games? And, you know, when a guy hasn't proven it against a starting caliber offensive lineman, I don't know that you can trust that ability is going to port. And if you don't have the body type to maybe hold up on all 3 downs, it's kind of risky to put that on your roster. And, you know, look, Tyrus Wheat doesn't have this huge long resume, but he does have 200 plus defensive reps, 200 plus special teams reps in the regular season, where you have tape of him going against guys, including Taylor Decker and Penei Sewell last year in the Dallas game. And so at least you know that he's competent and capable in those situations. And this is a guy that you're going to need maybe 10 to 20 snaps a game from right now. You know, Aiden is going to play 85%. Davenport, if healthy, which is really the major question mark here long term, but he's going to play 60 to 70. And Muhammad is going to play plenty. And I keep pointing this out to people, and I know you can't just project stats over time and just say, oh, if he had double the opportunity, double the stats. But quite frankly, his pass rush pressure rate per snap last year was very, very close to Za'Darius Smith's. And so I do think if you give that guy a little bit more opportunity, given what he did in the system last year, he's going to be better than people think. And so that's a really nice third. You know, is Smith going to be here? I don't know. I don't think Colton knows. His agent is putting out there that there's a bidding war and the national reporters are happily to,
among contenders.
Yeah. Happy to regurgitate the agent's talking points. But I think we know Smith prefers to be here. I think the Lions are interested. It's just a matter of, is it going to make sense at the dollar perspective and the role perspective?
Yeah. By the way, the the addition of the great Tyrus Wheat. I do want to name off something. Apparently, this was tweeted between the numbers on X. He said Tyrus Wheat has some grit index traits. He said Tyrus overcame adversity starting JUCO to the SEC, put on 60 pounds since high school, shows versatility and experience from safety to linebacker to defensive end. And then he just writes motor, which that's all you really need to know when you're talking about players that the Lions like. So
if putting on 60 pounds since high school makes you gritty, I am gritty as hell.
Yeah. Getting my spot on the 53.
Yeah. I noticed now I threw that alley-oop. I just noticed now, 60 pounds since high school. Hey, way to go, Tyrus Wheat. And they also brought in another player too. They brought in Tyler Lacy, the defensive tackle, who, like to your what you're saying earlier, Justin, has experience playing in the NFL. So I think that definitely matters, considering last year you had guys that didn't have a ton of experience playing for you late in the season for a team that wanted to win a Super Bowl. So I think it is relevant to bring those things up.
I didn't watch any of his – I mean, just being honest, I didn't watch any of his tape. The body type and the usage kind of reminds you of what Keith Cooper did for the Lions in the preseason. But, look, no sacks, very minimal pressures. It's a defensive tackle. I can't do it. Can't do it right yet. Maybe later.
Yeah, you go watch Tyler Lacy film, you sicko. You absolute sicko.
That's where Will's at right now.
It'd be disappointing if I didn't bring up the 2 third round picks that were cut in the same day, Hendon Hooker and Broderick Martin, which I have to give Brad a ton of credit for this, because actually Amon Ross St. Brown mentioned it today. He had his podcast with Pede Sewell, and you know, him and his brother EQ were talking about how GMs, you know, you have pride. Everyone has pride, but GMs have a ton of pride with their draft picks. And, you know, you see it all the time in the NFL where GMs are like, hey, man, give him one more year. All right, give this guy what I drafted him. I have a vision. Give him one more year. It got to a point with Hendon Hooker and Broderick Martin where Brad's like, you know what? Yeah, I drafted these two within the top 100 picks of an NFL draft. I also got Brian Branch, Sam Laporta, Jack Campbell, Jahmyr Gibbs in that draft. So obviously that helps a lot. He cut 2 third-round picks on the same day. And two guys that, you know, at the time, you're looking at as, okay, projects. Obviously, Hendon Hooker in kind of that gimmicky offense, but you saw the upside. And Broderick, the size, you know, what he can be. But I do got to give him a ton of credit, man, like swallowing your pride and being like, hey, it just didn't work out. Broderick Martin, obviously, he got beat out by other players. And same with Hendon Hooker. You had a guy in Kyle Allen who's been a journeyman who I've also apologized to already on the show for disrespecting the great Kyle Allen. He beat out Hendon Hooker, a 3rd-round pick. So 2 third-round picks cut in the same day. And then today, or you saw both of them. Broderick Martin went to the Kansas City Chiefs, the practice squad, I believe. He's on the practice squad there. Yep. And then Hendon Hooker, a practice squad for the Carolina Panthers. So both those, which he is from North Carolina, went to high school there. So there's obviously the familiarity there. But I had to say that, man. Give Brad a lot of credit for making that. I don't want to say it was a tough decision, but a decision that took a lot of swallowing the pride, I will say,
for Brad. Yeah, made it for him.
Yeah, exactly.
That's really what it comes down to. Like, these guys at some point had to perform. And, like, Hendon, if you want to give him an extra pass because of the ACL, fine. But he really didn't show much improvement in these preseason games. And I think if he'd even gotten out in that last game and showed you something, I think we might be having a different discussion. Now, it might have been too late by then, but in that final preseason game, if he just gave you some spark, the offense scored a touchdown. I think they only scored one field goal. That was the only points they scored in 20 drives this preseason that Hendon Hooker led. It was really bad to watch, and like, we can be honest about that. He did not win this job. He did not earn a spot on this roster, even though they only went with 50 players. I think that kind of tells you where they're at with him. And same with Broderick Martin. And the thing with Broderick is a lot of people were like, oh, maybe he can step it up in the preseason, or his win rate's something like this. You know, like, he's looking pretty good out there from what we've seen in like 10 snaps in a game. That's I get it. But what I would say about him is he was constantly repping with the 3rd and sometimes even the 4th string, if you want to call it that, defensive line in these practices. And like, I think it's fair to put some stock into that when you're out there watching these practices, because look, the practices have a lot to do with these decisions, not just the preseason games. And it's like, they might have been at their wit's end with this guy. When he came back from injury last year, there were so many other guys that were hurt at the position that he played. That defensive line position was decimated. They're bringing guys off the street, begging them to give them something. They barely knew their last name, and they're out there starting and playing significant snaps as you're making a playoff push like down the stretch in that season. And Broderick, they gave him one opportunity, didn't do anything with it, and then we didn't really see him the rest of the season. And I think that sort of told you everything you need to know. And it's maybe, you know, holding out a little hope for the year 3 jump that we've seen some guys make, but it just didn't really materialize with this guy. And look, if your worst draft picks are, you know, a developmental tackle in the 3rd round and a developmental quarterback in the 3rd round, especially when a guy like Brad Holmes says the talent that we were getting in the 3rd and 4th in 2021 is completely different from what's coming out in 2025, 4, 3, as NIL makes an impact and guys are staying in school longer. He's the one saying that, which is why he's taking some more swings on guys. If you swing and miss, like, I'm not going to be too upset based on what else you've done in the draft, right? Like, His hit rate is pretty high. He's batting like 800, which is insane.
Great.
So if that's your worst picks, I think you can live with it. Are you, as a GM, are you a little bit disappointed it didn't work out? Sure. But like that's life in the NFL, and you got to move on and regroup. And to his credit, he cut bait with players he didn't think were good enough to make the roster.
Mm-hmm. I've been dropping this line lately. It's just kind of become my go-to line because I think it's wild how much like people rail on a Broderick Martin pick, and it's like this is the straw you have to grasp at. And I'm like, do you think people in 1941 were like, yeah, I mean, Ted Williams, he's good, but what about the 59% of the bats he didn't get a hit? It's crazy. Like it's wild to me. Like you have a GM that is hitting at an unprecedented rate, certainly for a Detroit Lions GM, and it's brought you from perennial garbage cellar dweller to the doorstep of the Super Bowl. And obviously last year's playoff exit was disappointing with all the injuries, but it doesn't matter. Like they're going into their second straight season as a legitimate Super Bowl contender. The year before that, they went to the NFC Championship and probably should have won that game. Like Broderick Martin is your complaint? Like it's crazy. It's
Come
crazy
on
to me.
What are we talking about?
And, yeah. And so like let's look at those picks individually. Like I totally understand and was super supportive of the Hendon Hooker pick because I thought you got value there for what type of player he was. You know, this was a Heisman front runner at the time of his injury. I thought you got a bargain rate just because of the age and whatnot. And when you have a quarterback that is top five in salary, you need a backup that is cheap. And to have a backup that's cost controlled for 4 years makes a ton of sense. And look, it didn't work out. There's no question about it. It didn't work out. Oh, well, with Broderick Martin, again, you're taking this gamble on a run-stuffing nose tackle with kind of freakish traits, right? Like 330 pounds, 36 inches long. Like those things are crazy. And,
yeah.
You know, you go back to Holmes's time at the Rams, and they had those weird picks. They had John Franklin Myers, the defensive end from Stephen F. Austin. You know, they had Cooper Kupp. Cooper Kupp's from Eastern Washington, right? And mm-hmm. not a particularly special athlete. And, you know, those guys worked out. You take those weird stabs in the third round and later, and sometimes they pay off massive, massive dividends because you see something. And sometimes they don't. But look, I think we can all agree, like, Holmes has been a very, very successful general manager. And, you know, if this is the thing you have to complain about, and, you know, Manu is going to be the next one because mm-hmm. that's what's left. If Manu doesn't become, what's the Eagles tackle? Mailata?
Mailata.
Yep. If he doesn't become an all-pro, like, this is going to be the next thing people are grasping. It's a fourth-round pick. Like, chill. Find something else to complain about.
Yeah,
I think it's I'm a little puzzled by it as well. I think it's okay to bring up draft picks and be like, you know, that one didn't work out. It's easy to say in hindsight, but to your guys' point, like when you have a GM that's hitting at this type of rate, it's not even a conversation to me. It'd be different if, you know, Brad Holmes was fumbling, you know, first, second round picks and you're selecting guys that aren't working out. But it's like, dude, especially that draft, like, that draft, I think Nolan put out actually from the Detroit News. He put out like, I think every GM would take that draft with Hendon and Broderick, like just to have those dudes in. You could sprinkle them in there. I think Colby was in that draft actually. I don't know, I can't remember. But the back half of that draft, you'll take the front half of that draft. Those are all future, basically all pro players. Yeah, but that's, you know. I guess that's a fan base. I guess every NFL fan base finds reasons to complain a little bit. It happens.
I think he's been so good that it's working against him because people expect all of his players to be all pros or pro bowlers by year two. And it's like some of these guys, he's been very clear, they're developmental guys. Now, what developmental means is they're going to need multiple years. It could work out. It could not. There's a risk when you draft someone with that label. And when they label guys, they're clearly letting us know. They told us Broderick was going to take time. They told us Monty was going to take time. There's no guarantee these guys are going to work out. All they can tell us is like, this is why we took him. We think he's got upside. If we give him a couple years in our system, he could be something. They're not guaranteeing us that these guys are going to be stud down the road. And I think you can live with that sort of risk where they're getting these guys. And again, based on what Brad says about the just different level in that like late day two, early day three talent, based on where it was when he first got here, it's a risk you're willing to make. Like, that's the reason why they went up and got Isaac Toslaw, and that seems to be working out pretty good so far. So you're gonna hit some of those, you're gonna miss, but I think he feels comfortable taking those swings, just because he knows what he has in place, the development, the staff, the infrastructure to kind of get the most out of these guys. And if they don't, I think it's still a good process.
Yeah, just look at, I mean, you the hit rate Brad has for players that are not developmental is not going to be the same hit rate as guys that are developmental. Yes. Because you're taking them bigger risk. Like, it's, yes, like, you know, just because Broderick and Hennon didn't work out and they were third round picks, it's like, okay, well, he drafted Kirby and Aleem in the third round and those guys weren't developmental. They hit right away. Isaac, obviously, you'd argue a little bit.
I would counter that Kirby was absolutely developmental.
Oh, because he did play what he
barely,
was
barely, yeah. Barely played. He was a converted receiver. Yep. I don't think he started until
that's actually
second
fair
or
point.
Third game of his senior year. First yep. team all pro. Mm-hmm. So, like, I don't know. You take St. Brown, Derek Barnes to a lesser degree, Malcolm Rodriguez, Kirby Joseph, you know, Christian Mahogany seems to be on that track. You're talking about guys picked 97th or later in drafts who are major, major contributors to first team all pros. Like, any other GM would just dream of that kind of late success.
Yeah.
I forgot about that. Kirby played wide receiver. You totally forgot.
He will not let you forget.
Yeah. He's got hands, dude. I mean, there's no doubt the guy's got hands. Before we got 8 minutes, before we get out of here, I want to get your guys' thoughts. Final kind of just on the roster, any position groups you guys have your eyes on, or whether it's a concern level or just intrigue about a position group as we head closer to the season, you want to see what kind of Brad does with that specific position group.
I mean, you got to start at edge, right? I think
for sure.
Is it going to be Zadarius or is it going to be someone else? I think that's the question right now.
Tyrus Wheat.
Yeah. Gritty. I mean, they can sell us on that if they want. I don't think the fan base is going to be too excited if he's out there a lot, but yeah, I mean, obviously all eyes go to Zadarius right now, and whether or not he comes back, we don't know. It does seem like he was waiting out training camp. He was a guy that probably is at his age and his, you know, level of experience, probably wants to bypass that. And now it seems like he's ready to make a decision probably soon ish if his agent's putting stuff out there. So we'll see. I have questions about what his role on this team would be, because if he expects to be a full-time starter, I think they like Davenport. I really do. I think Davenport's a better scheme fit. I think he does what the Lions want opposite of Aiden Hutchinson. And I think you could probably say Zadarius's game is a little bit more comparable to Hutch's. And it's like, do you want, you know, two of those guys? Maybe Zadarius might not be as good against the run as a Marcus Davenport. He might be chasing his own numbers a little bit more, whereas Davenport's more going to play within the structure of the defense. So, like, if you're asking me who they want as a starter, I think I would genuinely tell you Marcus Davenport. The only problem with that is you don't know health. And so I look at the depth and I'm like, they need somebody, whether it's him or someone else. They need to get someone in here. And if Zadarius wants to come back and is willing to play on, like, a lesser contract, then he might be able to get elsewhere. And he's happy with the role that the Lions end up giving him. By all means, go out and get him. I really don't know what he's looking for at this point in time. The money, the opportunity, I think that's all going to be a factor in this conversation.
I think it goes back to our conversation last week. And at the time, you know, Graham Glasgow had gotten banged up in practice. We didn't know what that looked like. Think I got word the next morning that it wasn't serious. And obviously that's great. But, you know, Glasgow at this stage of his career and a little bit of a durability concern certainly affected him pretty mightily down the stretch last year. You know, coming back from Tate Ratledge, you know, it's another guy that's missed a little bit of time kind of every college season with little things. And so I look at the depth on the interior. It's already super inexperienced with Ratledge and Mahogany. I trust both those guys when they're out there, but you know, what does it look like after that? You know, I like Coyote, but it's a pretty big drop off. Kingsley, the strength is certainly an issue. If you put him in tandem blocks, combo blocks, you know, I think he holds up fine. I think he's got the intelligence to play the position, the athleticism to play the position, but play strength is not quite there yet. I think keeping Cologne on the practice squad was a good move. Offensive tackle depth, I mean, it's bad here, but it's bad everywhere in the NFL. Like, that's not an interesting statement. People need to get off the Lions needing more offensive. Every team needs more offensive tackle depth. But I'm fairly concerned if a Glasgow or a Ratledge or a Mahogany goes down, what does that offensive line look like? I think that's probably alongside edge rusher, you know, my biggest concern about the roster.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think those are the two. I would throw in there, it's more just a curiosity, from a curiosity standpoint, just the DB room, because they have the outside, specifically outside corner. When you look at the roster, you have DJ Reed and Terron Arnold, obviously. They had Ennis. He's obviously ruled out for the season. But then they have Rakia Sin, who's listed kind of as a safety, but he can play outside corner. And then they have Maddox, who can play outside corner, but he's probably more of a nickel slash they have him at safety a little bit. So I want to know, not just outside corner, but also the safety room, kind of what happens if there is an injury, for example, to a Terron Arnold or DJ Reed. I'm assuming Rakia Sin would slot right in. But then, of course, if there's something that happens to one of your starting safeties, like what happens there? Maybe Maddox moves back. It's like they got a lot of versatility there. I just want to see how the pieces get moved if there is an injury. That's something I'm very curious about, because, you know, they got rid of Nick Whiteside and they have corners, obviously, on their practice squad. But it seems like they really want to roll with the guys that can play multiple positions, and they have that with Rakia Sin and Maddox. So I'm going to pay attention to the DB room moving into the season. I'm excited. I think they got better at depth in the DB room. And then they signed a safety today, which this is another watch film on this one, Justin, if you got extra time.
No.
Mr. Daniel Thomas, safety from Jacksonville. You'll have fun with that one. I don't know what to expect. Special team ace. So they at least got some more depth at safety. But I think interior offensive line, edge with Za'Darius, and then I'll just throw in that DB room. Obviously, they address safety today, so those are probably the main ones I would pay attention to. So I think we kind of nailed all that. But yeah, I mean, I see the chat kind of chiming in as well. Peaceful Tim said, "I'm concerned about backup center. Goff doesn't like the pressure in his face," which you kind of already alluded to that with Kingsley, which they seem to really like Kingsley. Which Tristan Colon is on the practice squad now. And he was the guy
QB
was taking that second center spot.
You know which QB likes pressure in his face?
No one.
None of them. None of them.
Yeah. I guess that's fair. And they still have, I forget, Miles Frazier, who will eventually be back as well.
That should definitely help, for sure. That's one that, you know, falls off the radar because out of sight, out of mind. We haven't seen him practice since May. And really, those practices don't count because they're no pads. Yeah. I will say really quickly on DBs, I love Rakia Sin. I love the way he fits. I mean, it totally reminds me of the Tim Patrick move from last year. Like, he steps in the building and you're like, oh shit, like, where's this guy been? Like, that's a lion right there. Like, he's just a boxer at the line of scrimmage. I like him playing corner. I am shocked at how well he's taken to safety despite not doing it since high school when he was first picking up the game. I like it a lot, but you're absolutely, it's fair to bring up the depth in the secondary, because it's not if injuries happen, it's really when in the secondary, and they could just go so many different directions. I mean, I think the only one we know is if there's an outside cornerback injury, Amik's the first one that's kicking outside, but I don't know what they do if Kirby or Branch goes down. I don't know if it's Yassin. I don't know if it's Maddox. I don't know if they're popping up somebody from the practice squad or rolling, you know, the newcomer out there. Like, it's a little bit of a mystery. So get suspended for hitting a guy and flipping off Lambeau. I don't know.
Yeah. Everything's on the table. You know what I mean? Everything's on the table. It could be anything. And it's the safeties that people were paying attention to. None of them. I mean, they went and got another safety. They went and got a different safety. Ian Kennelly, you know, Lauren Strickland, who they do like Lauren Strickland a lot. So he'll always stick around on the practice squad, but, and then they had Eric Hallett, who was kind of playing, I guess, a little bit of nickel.
Everything.
Yeah, all he was playing everything, pretty much.
Just DB, yeah.
Yeah, just
sucking down DB. As that.
And they didn't.
The secondary is like Voltron, man. They just all plug and play wherever.
It's really interesting. Like, at first I was like, yeah, and I still think this, if there's an injury at outside cornerback, Amik's going to move out there, but they really like Amik at nickel, and that's why one of the reasons why Ennis was even playing nickel in camp and in OTAs. It's like, hey, we really like this guy at nickel, and let's just let him go there and kind of get a feel for that. And we like him there. Let's not mess with Amik. So maybe they move Yassin to the outside if it comes to that. But yeah, they got so many chess pieces in this defense. They can move guys around. Yassin is really taken to safety, as Justin mentioned. And I think he likes the challenge of like kind of seeing the whole field and, you know, the putting his IQ to work back there. So you would obviously like to have a guy like Ennis. And speaking of future Brad Holmes bus conversations, he might be in there if, you know, he keeps getting injured. I think fans will probably kind of target him as the next one. You know, I don't know if they're going to add another piece there, but I do think like the flexibility and the versatility of the guys they do have probably makes them feel a little bit more comfortable going with a lower number in total instead of adding more to that room.
Missouri just called. They want her degree back.
Probably. I mean, it's right there if they want it.
They can't talk down about the Tigers. That's the rule, right?
Yeah. Tell them to come and get it. Tell them to beat Central Arkansas first tomorrow night.
Hey, Jeff, take us home. I got a concert to get to.
There you go. Lions Collective. You can check more.